I'm Jeremy Fulkerson, and I host the Hidden Stories podcast on the Sell or Die Network. In our podcast, we share stories of seemingly everyday people that are your neighbors, community leaders, entrepreneurs, survivors, mothers, fathers, and friends, but we don't share the regular dinner talk conversations. I believe we all want to be better spouses, friends, parents, and leaders. My hope is by hearing these hidden stories, it will give you the courage to be a better you. Find me on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. There are links in the show notes to subscribe.
After that, my dad sat me down that summer and said, "What are you going to do with the rest of your life?" I said, "I have no idea, Dad." And he said, "Well, I think you ought to go work with Southwestern selling books door to door." And I said, "Dad, no, no, no. Sales is, you're the sales guy. I'm going to do something with sports." And he said, "Well, I know you want that car, right?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "How are you going to pay for that car?" And I said, "I thought you were going to pay for it." And so he said, I've seen kids their first summer at Southwestern receive checks for $20,000 after a summer selling books door to door. And so that's all I needed to hear. I said, "Sign me up." And he called the CEO and they sent somebody down to tell me about it. And that first summer, I ended up finishing number one out of about 3,000 college students and made about $36,000.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, America's premier, preeminent. It's actually global now. We have people from Canada and people from Ethiopia and people from England listening to the show.
This show actually does really well north of the border. We are top 100 in Canada.
Woo-hoo! Wow.
That's amazing.
I love
that. What's that about?
I have no idea, but it's...
They're drinking their Timmies, you eat Timmies, right? Those are the donuts.
Telling my hockey jokes.
They're drinking their Tim Hortons and eating their Timmies.
And we're
listening.
Very appreciative of all of you.
Yes, thank you guys.
Yep, A. And I think that we should talk... I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute.
So welcome to Sell or Die. And I want to talk about this week's guest for just a moment, and then we will talk about ourselves.
Yeah, well, we're changing things up a bit this week. Normally, if you're new to Sell or Die and don't know this, we have two guests every week, one on Tuesday and one on Thursday.
Yeah.
But this week, we are changing things up a bit. So I interviewed Dustin Hillis, the co-founder of Southwestern Consulting, a few weeks ago, and he had so much amazing information to give, and the conversation was so deep that when we finished the interview, we knew, like, it was just like a thing. We knew we had to split it up in two parts.
Sure.
Okay? So Dustin has worked with major companies like Google, DirecTV, Toyota.
Anybody big?
Yeah. He's worked with them on leadership, sales, and workplace culture. And today we're going to give you part one of the interview. And then on Thursday, we're going to give you part two.
But before we start any interview with anybody, especially with Dustin, let's read one of your fantastic five-star reviews from iTunes.
It's our fantastic reviews.
No, it's yours, Shane. Oh. It's all about you.
I don't know about that.
So, Doug, who do we have this week?
All right, this week we have Sedan King.
Wait. Two-door or four-door?
Oh, man.
Do they even make two doors? Oh, wait. I think Nada drives a two-door.
He does drive a two-door. Yeah.
Two doors are difficult these days.
Especially if you're fat and trying to get in the back seat.
Ew. All right. So Sedan King writes, "From Motivation Monday to great interviews, there's always something informative and entertaining. You'll always be left with something to think about and apply to your sales week. Simply the best."
Well, wow. Sedan King, thank... Sedan King, you're one hell of a judge.
We love your five-star reviews on iTunes.
I think you're a four-door myself.
Hey, we have a goal in December to get to 300 iTunes reviews. So if you guys have been listening this whole time and have not yet given us a five-star review,
we want just a little Hanukkah.
Come on, we need your help.
We need Hanukkah presents. We need Christmas presents. And you can give them to us in the form of a five-star review. Come
on. That is right.
It takes 2 minutes to do the right thing.
And listen, we have a direct line to Santa Claus. We train their sales team every year, and we'll ensure that you get some extra things under your tree.
That's
the
right.
elf this morning showed up. We forgot
to move the elf.
Oh, my God.
Did Gabrielle notice?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Right away.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Elf not moved.
I bet the elf and the cactus 2 nights ago. That probably wasn't the best idea, but it looked cute.
No, the note tomorrow morning is going to say, I got stuck in the cactus.
Gabrielle's review of The Elf on the Shelf is going to be 3 stars.
Listen, the elf arrived early this year,
and had to hang around for a couple
weeks. I'm sorry, but normally elves arrive on December 1st, and our elf arrived way too early for my sanity.
Exactly, and... the reason that the elf didn't move last night is that we don't have 100,000 downloads yet this month. So if you would please.
Yeah, come on, move that elf.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All right, announcement time. Jeffrey, you have a big announcement.
Yes. We are nearing the end of 2018. Now, that's not a new announcement. But we've had so many amazing episodes this year. It's hard to pick out the best ones. But you, in the studio audience, you, the listener, you, the diehard, have your favorites. So if you could vote for your favorite episode right now on our official Sell or Die Facebook group, that would be the greatest. I have my favorite picked out. Jen has her favorite picked out. And we are going to move forward with our favorites, but we would love to know yours. We may repeat one. So search for Facebook on Sell or Die Hard. Join the group and vote for your favorites. Vote early. Vote often, especially those who live in Chicago.
Okay.
Are the Bulls still in the NBA? Okay, so...
All right. Spoiler alert.
Oh.
Spoiler alert. We're going to take your favorites, and we're going to use them to put together a special Best of 2018 episode at the end of the year.
We're going to make $1 million from it, and you and the studio audience... We'll never see a damn dime.
Oh, man. So what... So not only that, but like... If you choose guest episodes, we may have those guests back in 2009, and we'll tell them they were a favorite of 2018.
There's a couple of guests I'd like to see again.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Just a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to bring you fresh new stuff too. So let's get to the first part of our conversation with Dustin Hillis. Dustin's going to talk about his first sale and how he used a sports mentality to achieve greatness.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the great Dustin Hillis.
Dustin Hillis is the co-creator of the Top Producer's Edge sales curriculum and Manager's Edge leadership curriculum that has been used with over 10,000 clients in one-on-one sales and leadership coaching across the globe. He comes on Sell or Die today to help give us a few tips on sales. Diehards, say hello to Dustin. Dustin, welcome.
Hello.
Hey, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know you go way back with Jeffrey. When did you decide you wanted to get into sales?
So 16 years ago, I had my highest high and lowest low all in the same day. And my football coach pulled me into his office and said, "Hey, Dustin, good news, I'm giving you the starting spot for our football team." And it was our spring training game day. And on that same day, I received my last concussion, which was not very fun. And at the time in my life, I thought my life was over and football was all that I knew. And it's funny how it works, where sometimes the biggest blessings come out of the worst circumstances. And so I ended up transferring University of Tennessee after that. My dad set me down that summer and said, "What are you going to do with the rest of your life?" I said, "I have no idea, Dad." And he said, "Well, I think you ought to go work with Southwestern selling books door to door. And I said, Dad, no. Sales is, you're the sales guy. I'm going to do something with sports. And he said, well, I know you want that car, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, how are you going to pay for that car? And I said, I thought you were going to pay for it. And so he said, I've seen kids their first summer at Southwestern receive checks for $20,000 after a summer selling books door to door. And so that's all I needed to hear. I said, sign me up. And he called the CEO and they sent somebody down to tell me about it. And that first summer, I ended up finishing number one out of about 3,000 college students and made about $36,000 approximately.
In like 2 months?
Yeah, it was about 12 weeks.
Wow.
And then my second summer, I brought a team of 8 people and made about $46,000. And then my third summer, I broke the all-time company sales record and made over $100,000 in 14 weeks selling books door to door.
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it.
I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
So when you first joined Southwestern selling books, did you have any sales experience?
No. I just had been an athlete up to that point in my life.
And what do you think contributed to your success?
It was the training that Southwestern provided. It is the best sales training in the world. And coming in and going through their pre-training and then their 1 week sales school where they go through step-by-step the cycle of the sale, self-motivation, self-management, and they teach you how to run your own business during the summer. And I just was coachable and willing to work hard, and I did what they told me to do, and the rest was history.
Okay, so how many other students were there approximately?
I think that year, about over 3,000.
Okay, so hold on. So there were approximately 3,000 students. You're one of them. You finish in the top one, but you all took the exact same training. So what did you do specifically that helped you rise above everyone else? Because all these other kids were sitting in the same, you know, taking the same lessons that you were.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting. I ended up having a revelation happen with that year. I got interviewed at the end of the summer and I finished number one. And the question that our marketing director asked me was, how'd you do it? And I said, well, I did exactly what they said in sales school. I worked 85 hours a week. I followed the script. I actually used the clothes to close people. I worked on my positive affirmations all summer and I did what they said they were going to do. And he said, and I said, I did 30 demos a day. And my sales manager told me that if you want to finish number one, if everybody else is doing 30 demos a day, you need to do 35. If everybody else is working 80 hours a week, then you need to work 85. So I said, okay. And I actually did it. And he said, so you actually did 30 demos a day? And I was like, well, of course, I did what I said I was going to do. That's when it occurred to me that everybody else didn't.
Oh.
And so the, I guess, uniqueness is the ability to actually follow through and be so coachable that you follow the script, you follow the plan, and you don't second guess it. You actually do literally what you're coached to do versus changing it up and trying to do it your own way.
So how do you think your sports background and competitive nature played a role in that?
I would say that it built a resilience in me and also determination. I had a wrestling background. I was All-State wrestling in Georgia. And there was a time growing up, I was not the best athlete in the world. And going into the state tournament my junior year, I was actually ranked third in the area, meaning that I was the last ranked person going into the state tournament. And up to that point in my life, I could honestly say I had a habit of quitting. I had a habit of negative self-talk. When I looked in the mirror, I didn't see a winner. I just saw some kid that was just trying to get by day to day. And all of a sudden, this state tournament completely changed my life, where I found myself in the first match where this kid threw me on my back, had me on my back in a headlock, squeezing the life out of my head. And the first thought that went through my head was the normal thought that I've had up to that point in my life, which is, oh, that was the shortest trip to the state tournament ever. And then something just clicked inside of me. And I don't know what it is other than telling the story, where I got mad, but not at him. I got frustrated with myself for the first time. And it was almost like an out-of-body experience. I could see myself on the mat lying there about to roll over and get pinned. And I literally yelled the word no out loud. And the audience, from the audience point of view, I don't really remember what I did, but they said I looked like a wild Wolverine just rolling around on the mat. And next thing I know, I'm on top of this kid and I pin him. And I stand up, and for the first time in my life, the voice inside my head had changed from one of defeat and worry, going, you know, what if I get hurt? What if I run out of energy? What if I lose? To I stopped caring about all of that. And the only thing I was thinking of was, I'm going to give it 100%.
Cool.
So I went into the next match wrestling a guy who had won state in the state of Tennessee the year before, and his parents moved to Georgia. So now he was in Georgia wrestling in the Georgia state tournament. And he picked me up and slammed me on my head within like 10 seconds of the first match. And if you haven't ever been slammed on your head before, I don't recommend it.
I've never been slammed on my head, okay, just for the record.
Yeah. Don't do it. It's not fun. And so I got, and then he slammed me on my head. Then he let me back up. Then I went back in to the match, and he did it again. Same move. And it was embarrassing. And normally what I would be thinking before this point in my life was I would want to quit. I would want to get out of the painful situation as fast as possible. I would want to not be embarrassed, and I'd be worried what people are thinking. But for the first time ever, the thought that was going through my head was, I'm going to give it 100%. I'm going to go after this guy with everything that I got. And I knew the counter to the move. So I went in, he went for the same exact move again, hit the counter, which was like an aerial flip counter, and flipped him over my back and landed in a headlock, and I pinned the guy. And I stood up, my coaches were in shock, his coaches were in shock, everybody was in shock besides me. And ended up going on and making it to the finals in the state tournament, and had another big match where a guy that had beaten me twice, I ended up beating him and slammed him on his head for the first time he ever had an injury timeout. And that whole series of events completely changed the way that I think. And it's a confidence anchor. So that was a confidence anchor for me to go back to time and time again, saying, if I can make it through that, I can make it through something else. And then selling books was another confidence anchor to say, okay, if I can make it through selling books door to door, straight commission, I can also do something else. And writing my first book, I grew up slightly dyslexic, and any of my elementary school teachers that would know that I've written three books would be shocked right now.
I hope you sent them signed copies.
No.
Come maybe on, you should. And spell like your name a little bit wrong, yeah, when you sign it.
Oh, but man. I think sports gave me that resilience, I would say.
That's cool. When you were describing the wrestling story about being slammed on your head, I'm thinking it's just like sales. Like, that's, they're slamming the phone down on you all the time, you know? Like, but how diehards out there, how often are you getting back up? And how often are you saying, no, I'm not going to let that competition beat me. I'm going to win. And like the fact that you said it out loud is so cool. Like you affirmed it to yourself first, talked it first, and then began to think about it and really act on it. I think that is an awesome story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And yeah, it made a difference.
So do you think, you know, once you started to incorporate these concepts, did sales begin to come easily to you?
It did. Yeah. I would say it was pretty natural. That combined with the training that Southwestern provided me really set me on my course to be where we're at today. But my first week on the book field, I finished number one, and they have a pace setter. So it's funny. I actually didn't know my sales talk coming out of sales school. My sales manager set me down and said, "Hey, I think we need to keep you here for another week," because I couldn't make it all the way through my sales talk. And so my first sale that I actually made was convincing him to let me to go to the field to actually go sell. And then that week, through just sheer, I studied the script a lot. And, you know, the first thing that I learned was actually the close.
Mm-hmm.
And I memorized the script from close, then the presentation after I knew the close. And I think that really helped. And so my first week, I actually finished number one and was on the pace setter for the first year dealers. So,
wow, that's cool. One of the big things that you mentioned was being coachable, listening to the training plan and then moving forward with it. What would you tell someone who's new to sales that has no idea even if they're coachable or not coachable? Like, how do you become coachable?
You know, it actually is one of the hardest things that you can give yourself the assignment to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's letting go of your ego. It's letting go of your selfishness and not thinking that you've arrived, not thinking that you know it all, not thinking that there is a finish line, and just being willing to learn something always in every area from somebody. And as soon as you feel like you know it all, that's the beginning of the end. It's a slippery slope after you think you've arrived. And so, you know, the ego is a beast that needs to be slayed every day. And especially in the sales world, you know, sometimes people taste success and they outperform people and they think that they're God's gift to greatness. And that's a scary place to be. And I don't think that's really what God designed us to do. I think we're designed to live up to our potential every day. We're designed to learn. We're to grow and enjoy the journey up grow and not feel like there's some destination or some finish line or some milestone that we have to, some pinnacle we have to achieve.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the hardest things for people, especially when they think they know everything.
Oh, yeah.
So for someone new getting into sales, what's something you recommend that they do? What's one piece of advice you have for them?
Pay attention to the culture that you're surrounding yourself with. It's so much more important than making money. I think at the end of the day, God doesn't care how much money's in your bank account, but I do think that you get to look back like a movie, is what at least in my mind, I think it looks like, is you get to see the lives you positively impacted. And sales has always been the greatest career since the beginning of time. It's always been the opportunity to financially make the most money. However, if that's what motivates you, it's very limiting. It's not fulfilling. I've personally coached billionaires and they're struggling with the same stuff that the average Joe would be struggling with. And so getting into it for the right reasons is the most important thing. So pay attention to the culture that you're around. Pay attention to making sure you're serving the world. I had lunch with Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and he was telling me over our lunch conversation that in the Hebrew language, the definition of work is fulfilling a need in society.
So So Dustin's first sale was convincing his boss to let him out in the field early, or really on time, not late like they thought he should. And I have a similar story.
Go.
All right. So I was applying. A lot of you guys, diehards, you know I worked for Cutco when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And my first sale was not actually selling knives. My first sale was getting the job. So what happened was I walked into the New York City office and applied, and we had this amazing interview, amazing conversation. I went home thinking like, it's a sure thing. And I got a phone call saying, we'd love to hire you, but we think you're too young.
Oh.
Yeah. And I don't think they'd like be allowed to say that today. I don't know.
Yeah, that's ageist.
I know. We check
that's
IDs so ageist.
Here at Cutco.
We think you're too young, so come back in a year or two. And I was like, too young in my head, right? I'm thinking like, too young for you.
Right.
I'm going to go make this sale. So I went to another Cutco agency in Jersey, and which actually ended up being more convenient for me anyway at the time.
Wait a second. And for those of you listening, there's two New Jerseys. There is Jersey if you live in zip code 07 north of Trenton.
Yes.
There's New Jersey if you live south of Trenton.
So
civilized New Jersey. Not so, Jersey.
So I grew up in what I consider civilized Jersey.
Yeah, exactly.
And and I went to the Cutco office and made the sale. And here's the cool thing about that. First of all, as a young kid, it definitely gave me confidence. Like, don't take the first no. Who cares that they said no? You can still do this. And I got it, right? But second of all, I truly believe things happen for a reason. And I didn't get that job. And I had to let that go to make in order to apply somewhere else, right? And once I did that, I ended up having the best boss on the planet, who I still keep in touch with to this day. Okay, how many people keep in touch with their boss from 20-something years ago? I don't know. I do. And I worked with a great team. I had great training. I don't know if I would have gotten that in New York. Maybe I would have. But I got it because I continued to go for it and make that second sale.
Diehards, every obstacle is an opportunity.
Boom.
If you look at it that way. She could have gone home, griped to her mother.
Cried.
Exactly. I fell off the bike, you know. Get back on.
So, Jeffrey, that's a great story, Jen. That's
Thanks.
A fantastic story. Jeffrey, was there a moment in the life of the great Jeffrey Gittimer where someone said, I don't know if this guy's ready?
Every single person can remember where they were on 9/11. I was in Las Vegas, and I had to do a seminar for 350 people from a fast food company, managers who were most of them had never been to any kind of a convention before. And I come down through the casino after I'd watched I was looking for the score of the Monday Night Football game, and that's how I watched the plane go into a building. I go, this is not good. And I'm walking through the casino in Vegas, and people are gambling. They had no idea what happened. And I go into my seminar room, and all of the CEOs and the CFOs and the CMOs are in the room saying, we're going to cancel the event today. And I looked at all of them, and I said, no, we're not. I said, what's going to happen is you're going to send 350 people back to their hotel rooms to watch a plane hit a building 200 times. I said, I'm going to give 45 minutes of positive attitude seminar that I had not planned on whatsoever. And if the audience likes it, we're going to keep going. And if they don't, we can send them to the room. You've wasted 45 minutes of time. Any argument with that? And CEO said, let's do it. And everybody else said, okay, boss, okay. You know. And I put 350 people in the room, and I talked for 4.5 hours.
Wow.
Nonstop. My first 20 years of training allowed me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, there were 350 books that I had to sign. I signed them all 9/11, not knowing that it was going to become 9/11. And it was a turnaround day for me as a presenter. Most interestingly, everyone walked to the big televisions that were showing all the stuff in Vegas. I was at the Rio, and I was walking away from the television toward the cash machine. I wanted cash, and I stuffed a bunch of cash in my pocket. I went and did my seminars, and then I had the I literally lived in Las Vegas for 7 days while they redid the airlines, redid all the stuff, and no one had any of their, you know, and U.S. Airways at the time dropped everyone's class, and you had to, it was a horrible thing. Well, by the time I got to the plane, half the people had gotten another way home.
Yeah.
I flew home. Yeah. The plane was literally half empty.
Yeah.
And so I flew home in first class, and literally three days later, I had to go fly someplace else. There were four people on a TWA plane from Charlotte to St. Louis.
Oh, my goodness.
Four people. Oh. Three in first class. And the guy who was in coach, I said to the flight attendant, let the guy come up here. And she goes, oh, we can't.
I said, you know what? God.
Yeah.
Rhymes with witch.
Oh, Jeffrey. Oh, Jeffrey, right. Cut.
And... And 2 years later, they were out of business.
That's an amazing sale that you made to the CEO.
Yeah.
Because number one, you snapped into positive mentality right away in order to give that to other people.
But I also had an audience responsibility. I knew that 350 people were going to go back to their room panicked, literally panicked. And at the end of 4.5 hours, I normalized them. Literally, we had, like, food afterwards. We were the only seminar in Las Vegas that day. Everything else got canceled.
Wow.
And one of the things that both of your stories share in common is that they required a supreme level of confidence.
Yeah.
And in part two of this interview with Dustin that's going to air on Thursday, we talk about the three levels of confidence. So you want to stick around, make sure you listen to that episode as well.
That's right. That's right. Now, diehards, I just want to remind you to participate in our Facebook voting poll. So if you're not yet in the Facebook group, join. You have to answer those questions or we don't let you in. Sorry.
Yeah.
We want to know
riddles three.
Yes.
They're very easy questions. Like one of them is, what's your biggest sales challenge or something like that, okay? So please answer the join, answer the questions.
When you answer the question, by the way, you give us information that we can turn into information that will help you make more sales.
That's right. What we're doing right now is we're tracking all of your challenges, and Doug is putting a topic with each one so that we can make sure to have specific topics based on what you want.
Right. We're not asking for your cell phone number, are we?
Yet.
Oh.
All right. So join our Facebook group. Get at the top there. It's pinned to the top. And vote on that poll for the best of 2018.
What's coming up this week, Jenny?
All right. Coming up, I did a special extra on Wednesday. And I preview some of the chapters from my book.
All right.
And
hold
you
up
get
book so no one can see it. Sales
and,
in New York.
Oh, yeah,
there it is.
Yeah. And you get extra behind the scenes, more insight into some of the stories, additional stories behind the book. And then on Thursday, we have part two of our Dustin Hillis sales conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to dive more into sales culture on Thursday. And then on Friday, it's our best of episode where we take the best of each week, chop it down to one episode to carry you through the weekend.
And we're pretty much gone now, right? I'm going Christmas shopping.
You are?
I got my list. I'm checking it twice.
Do you have my list?
No, I'm just going out to you don't understand. I'm Santa Claus. I go out. I buy myself a bunch of shit. And then I come home, and I'm the happiest guy on the planet. I wrap up everything, and, you know, I love stuff.
You wrap your own gifts?
Of course. Oh. And shake them and everything. But I always get what I want.
There you go.
Every time.
Yeah. So why don't we just trade lists?
Okay.
Okay.
So Gabrielle's list last year had a real magic wand.
Yeah,
and
that
a golden,
was classic.
And a golden ticket.
I want. Oh, man.
Kids want stuff today that they never wanted before. Like, I wanted an electric train or something. She wants a magic wand. No, a real magic wand.
Well, this year she really wants a hamster.
Yeah, that's gonna happen.
But I told her maybe she could get that at her other house.
Yeah, maybe if we land on Mars and five guys walk around, she can get a hamster.
Yeah, not here though.
No,
no, no hamsters. We already have two dogs.
Exactly. All right, so we're leaving now, and we're very grateful for you and your listenership. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm reminding you to make your Christmas list, check it twice, and then go make a sale. even if your ass falls off.
Sell or Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.